Okay, today, as I think I told you already, we've got some guest speakers coming to the class after this one, and they're mostly in programming and web development and that sort of thing. And their companies, one of them is from I've got an inner ear thing, by the way, which is why I was out yesterday, and it's making me very dizzy, so...
I just applied for a job that has to do with that.
Okay.
At the hospital, and you didn't really need an education, it's just like a basic type thing.
Okay. Well, I mean, working for them,
Yeah. They're
looking for, you know, they're looking for a lot of things. And you can ask, Terry is coming, who's an ex-student of mine. And they're looking, you know, the main thing they look for is programmers. But they're also looking for people in a variety of different areas. And we have a lot of people working over there. We have... you know, upwards of, I think, 20, 25, that people that not necessarily working here in Fall River, but over the years have gone, and most of them, as far as I know, have kind of stayed. Anyway, I think it is worth it, if you're free at 11, to come to that and look and see what they have to say. And you can ask them about jobs, you can ask them about a whole lot of things. One of them is, used to be my SI, and he is coming and supposedly bringing kind of his mentor at the company that he's working for with him, and talking a little bit about the support that the company offers and that sort of thing. Okay. And you are?
I'm Francisco Beckett.
You are here an hour early. I know. You are here an hour early. You're welcome to stay or?
I'll stay.
Okay. Actually, it would be good, actually, let's have you tell a little bit about what you're doing, because I don't know how many of you are able to come at 11. Okay, only about two. So why don't you start out and talk to this group about what you're doing.
Yeah, sure. Do you want me to come up there?
Yeah, sure.
What is this class?
This is PHP.
PHP MySQL?
Yep.
Yeah, this is where I started.
Right, so that's why I figured it would be worthwhile talking about it. So, because this is the main person that I actually wanted you to hear at 11 o'clock. So... since you're here, you might as well do it.
Sure, yeah. How's it going, fellow students? So I started here at BCC back in 2008, 2009, when Obama had just been elected. I remember that very vividly. And I graduated back in 2012. The entire time I was going to school here, I was working full time. So it was kind of tough, it wasn't easy. But I had a friend taking up computer courses. Yeah, I've always had been good with computers growing up, but I never learned how to program. So it was when I joined BCC, that's when I started programming, and I fell in love with it. And I stuck to it. I worked full time. Back at that time, I was doing a labor job until I was able to graduate. And I did really well in school, and Professor Grosser appointed me to a few different roles around the city for people looking for interns, and that's how I got started. And then I fell in love also here with a web program. This is actually the first class that I was like super heavy into, which was PHP and MySQL. But ever since I've graduated and took on the professional role, I just fell in love with JavaScript. Right around the time when I graduated, that's when, you know, there was a big JavaScript boom at that time. So now I'm a senior software engineer at Fidelity Investments in Boston. And I work in the Seaport. I work in the World Trade Center. I don't know if you guys know where that is. It's really nice. I work with really smart people. And I do full stack JavaScript work. So, meaning I work on web applications. I work on the browser, the server, which is all JavaScript as well. And I work with different kinds of database technologies. And I have to administer Windows servers, Linux servers. I basically, me and other two other coworkers, we maintain all the servers within the department. These are internal servers. They're not so customer facing, but they're still, well, they are customer facing, but within the organization. So it's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun. You're always learning. And I'm glad I came here and I got, you know, I only have, an associate's degree. I don't have a bachelor's, but it was enough to shoot me in the right direction. And I'll tell you this much, like, you should go if you have the opportunity to go and, you know, go after your bachelor's, your master's, then go ahead and do it. But if you feel like you got to get out there and you want to work and you want to make money and you want to, you want to be hands-on, then go ahead and do that as well, because I've worked with many smart people with degrees, and sometimes they don't know half the stuff you do, so just keep that in mind.
What do you use, how do you do JavaScript? What kind of editors, what...
Right now...
Talk a little bit about that.
Sure, I love Sublime, and I used to love Sublime, but now I just started using Visual Studio's Code, which is, again, I work primarily with JavaScript, so I don't have to worry about compilation and all that. But I use Visual Studio's Code. It's new. It's fairly new. It's very light, and you can actually debug Node, which not a lot of editors allow you to do. Mm-hmm. So you can set breakpoints, and you can step through, you know, normal debugging that you weren't really allowed to do previously. I think the only other editor that allowed you to do that was WebStorm, but I never used it, and I don't know how well it worked. But this one works really well, Visual Studio's Code, and also it's very, like, it was built, like, very targeted for scripting developers, and so you have the debugger for Node, but it's also integrated with Git, so it tells you which branch you're in all the time. It also keeps track of the files you're working on, so then there's a tab where you can click on and you can look at the difference, you know, the changes you've made.
Is that the one that is sort of the replacement of WebMatrix? Because I was looking at WebMatrix.
Yeah, it's new, it's fairly new.
And WebMatrix has been out, and I thought it was code.
Yeah, I remember I used WebMatrix a long time ago, but it was really, it seemed like there was a lot of stuff going on. Visual Studio's Code is super, like, straightforward. It's like maybe four buttons. You know, the debugger and the Git integration and the extensions tab, where there's a lot of extensions that you can install. And I love it. And you can also bring up the console there if you feel like getting into the terminal. And, I love it. I mean, also primarily because I can debug Node very easily, which to me was, previously I used to just log everything. And, you know, it works, but it's not the most ideal thing, right?
And talk about the full stack a little.
The full stack, some people are like, oh, there's no such thing as full stack. But guess what? If you're working on every single part of the application, you're doing full stack work. You know what I mean? When you join a corporation, if you're working on the .com level of the website, then it's going to be very designated. It's going to be, you know, folks working on database, folks working on the front end, folks working on the back end, security, QA. There's designated teams for all these different roles. But at the same time, depending on the company that you work for, they need people who are very experienced and who understand the whole, you know, the whole stack. And that's the term for full stack. But again, it's nice. It's nice when you do it. But after a while, it's like any other job. Like, you got to go in, you got to do, you know, you got to do your work. And at the end of the day, it's just code. And regardless if it's in the back end or the front end, I personally think the front end is more, it's harder. There are many more variables, especially nowadays with single page applications. You're constantly keeping the state, or a different state, I should say. And then you have to worry about all these different things and responsive design and also different browsers, right? Because if I'm running server code, it's just server. It's one server. I don't have to worry about, like, different, you know, server technologies. Meaning, like, if I'm writing Java, I'm writing Java. And that's it. That's my environment, right? And it's usually, it's like, you give me this, I'll get that, I'll do some calculation, and I'll spit it back to you. That's what server work pretty, you know, pretty much is. I mean, I'm simplifying, but when it comes to servers, writing code for server, it's more about design than actual coding, right? Because you want to design it well so that it's high performing, and it's also obviously well tested, and it works, you know, without memory leaks and things of that nature. But then again, the front end, I feel like it's more work. It's a lot more work, especially if you have to do the JavaScript and the HTML and CSS.
Right.
It's a lot of stuff. And also if you have to make it responsive.
Questions from you all. I've been asking them.
Yeah. So, my biggest problem with JavaScript is it forces the user to reveal its IP address. So, would there be a way to develop a variation or an alternative to JavaScript so that way it doesn't do that? It doesn't behave that way?
That's a very specific question. So I don't know why you would even be worried about that.
Well, I mean, I'm a security nut.
Yeah. Okay. Well.
And I'll, on my free time, a lot of the time, I spend time researching.
Yeah.
You know.
I think regardless of the language, there will always be a way to get your IP address. It doesn't really matter which language you're using, because at the end of the day, you're making an HTTP request. So that has to originate somewhere.
And well, OpenVPN is pretty bulletproof, you know.
Okay, well, I don't know enough to answer that question, but like I said, there's a will, there's a way. So that's, yeah, pretty much it.
Any other questions? Oh, come on.
Well, do you guys use BSD?
No. Maybe we do. I don't know. I work primarily on internal applications, so I'm not heavily involved with, because my applications work behind the proxy, so we don't have to worry so much about security and things of that nature. But I do, there was a customer facing one that we did, and anyways, it wasn't, we didn't hold a lot of, like, private content in order to get to that level of security. It was just mostly, like, HTTPS and making sure you had the proper language. Because at Fidelity, they don't even allow PHP to run their servers.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do they use instead?
They use a lot of Java, C Sharp.
Okay.
And now they're heavily into Node. They have, they just developed this thing called a digital publishing client service platform. We call it DPCS. And you can basically they had all the architects work on the solution, and they implemented like a full-on suite, right? And you can then just NPM install it within your environment, and then you pull in all these server-side scaffolding, client-side scaffolding, they're already architectured for you in a way, and then you can just start using it. And then you know, they give you examples and whatnot. So you're kind of, they're enforcing some sort of architecture on you. And but again, that that works with Angular and Node in the back end. And but anyway, so, and then once they make updates to that suite, then you can just upgrade through NPM. So you know, you can always elevate the version. You can bring everybody up to speed, which is really cool. I never worked in a company that did anything like that.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so Fidelity, even though Fidelity is like a financial services company, they're mostly like, you know, everything is in-house. So they write their own software. If they become dependent on some sort of technology, they'll just buy it off. And then you come, we have this office at the headquarters called 245. We had 245, sorry. It's right next to South Station. And you go in there and you see all their patents. They have a lot of patents. So they develop a lot of stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah, very cool.
What types of internships did you take? Because I assume like you didn't get to where you are now just by, you know, taking courses at BCC.
Yeah, well, this was definitely like a good starting point, obviously, because till this day I use everything that I've learned here, except for PHP, because PHP.
And that just happens to be the course you're in, but you know.
Yeah, I didn't use PHP in the beginning because I was working with WordPress websites. That's when I first started. That was part of my internship.
And WordPress is, PHP is, can be incorporated in WordPress.
Yeah, so right. WordPress is fully built in PHP. And so you do need to have PHP knowledge if you want to work with WordPress. And it's cool. Some people do well with that. Some people are very knowledgeable about WordPress. But yeah, I just kind of, like I said, I was in that JavaScript boom and I wanted to do like single page applications and Node. And I must say, like, I spent a lot of my own time on, you know. Back at that time, I mean, I'm 30 years old now. I was still fairly young. I was like, what, 24, 25. So I was really like focused, you know.
How many jobs have you had?
Since then?
Since you graduated.
I've had, I had four.
Okay.
I think this might be my fifth one. But I've been at Fidelity now for 2.5 years, so I mean, I really like it there. That's just how it is, you know. Like, I got my real start at like doing really heavy development. Because after my internship, I got a job at a design agency, and I was just doing mostly like jQuery interactive pieces, and that was cool. And we would spin up WordPress websites from time to time. And, but then I wanted to get more serious, so then I went to Boston and I joined this startup, which was really cool, but it was a lot of work. And the startup wasn't really making a lot of money, and they still aren't making any money till this day. Yeah, but they still find a way to stay afloat. But there was just a really bad vibe, but I learned a lot there. That's where I like officially became an engineer, because, you know, like I learned from top guys, like, I learned about testing, just build processes, and got more in-depth knowledge about databases. And then also when you get to a place where it's kind of cutthroat, like you own your stuff, you know, and then you have to, you know, you have to own it or else it doesn't look good on you. I basically built like a whole entire front end when that was a bad job. But then once I was done with the requirements that they had given me, then they started transitioning into a Java role, and I joined that job like, oh great, I'm going to learn Java. And then I learned that I hate Java. So never again. I promised myself that never ever am I going to take the job that has Java. I'm not going to get into the details, but if you feel like, you know, you should take up on it, go ahead, you might like it. But if you're building Android applications, there is no other way. But even Google's rolling off Java. Ever since Oracle bought it, they're having lots of problems. And, I don't know if you guys know about Swift. Swift is a language by Apple, and that's like kind of the new thing. That's where they're developing their native apps, iPhone apps with Swift. And that is that's an open source technology. So I hear the Android might be taking that on, so which would be good because then you're running natively. Because I don't know if you guys know how Java works. Java runs on a virtual machine, right? Which that's why it runs everywhere. But I feel like there's some sort of lag associated with that because it's not on the hardware itself. And that's why I have an iPhone and not Android. But yeah, I mean, you have to go out there and experience things. But what I would say, there's a lot there in the technology world, a lot, right? People are going to come in here and tell you about the next big thing or whatever. You should always focus on what these corporations are doing, because corporations pay big bucks for top guys to come in and architecture their whole, you know, their whole system. And when people are choosing a technology over another, then you know more or less where the market's going and what you should be investing your time on, because that's what the main thing that comes down to is your time as an investment, and you should invest it in the right technology that will make you more valuable in the market. Because people can come in here and tell you, oh, you should learn Go, you should learn this, you should learn, like, there's so much, you know, like, what's the flavor of the month? But you should, like, focus on what people are going to want to hire you.
What is, like, the main language that you say people hire for?
The JavaScript.
JavaScript.
Mm-hmm. It's JavaScript. Whether you know Java, you know C#, you know this or that, even if you know that, they still want you to know some sort of JavaScript. If people say, oh, yeah, I know JavaScript, it's not like that. JavaScript's a very hard language because it's loosely typed. You don't have the IDEs not helping you. You know, when you write Java, it's like, oh, it's like Eclipse is telling you how to write the code. And JavaScript's not like that. You have to, like, get in the code. You have to read everything, you know. It's tough. It's not easy.
How much jQuery?
jQuery, you know, jQuery just helps you. Like, once you, like, jQuery is just a library that helps you manipulate the DOM to get you to do things, right, with the DOM. But you get over that really easily, and then that's when you need a single page application framework to help you architecture the application the right way. So, like, something like Backbone or Angular. So now there's, like, they're on Angular 4 now, which was Angular 2 but went up to 4, and that's going to be a big transition because it's all written in TypeScript, and TypeScript is like it's where the future is going. So if you want to learn something cool, and also that might make you more valuable in the market, is TypeScript. Because TypeScript is it's built like on top of JavaScript, but it basically gives it makes JavaScript a typed language, so it has to compile. And there's a lot of good things associated with that, and there's a lot of features. But at the same time, it brings, like, it's easier for Java developers to come in. And also, like, C# developers to come in and learn, you know? People from different back-end technologies who understand that they have to learn JavaScript now, but then Microsoft built TypeScript, which is kind of like C# in a way. And anyways, the reason why I'm telling you this is because Angular 2 is written in TypeScript. So if you want to, like, become proficient in Angular 2, you have to pick up TypeScript. If you want to be really good at it.
Taking notes, folks.
And, yeah.
So, okay, you left here, and then how did you learn all of this? What happened that made you learn? Was it companies? Was it taking courses? Was it reading books?
It was a lot of my own time. Yeah, just like, I'm going to work on this little project so I can try to understand it. But the best thing to do, obviously, especially when you're young, is to just go and get that job, even if you get paid a little less money, because a year worth of experience in this field is a lot of time.
Learn a lot more in that year.
That's what I tell everyone. If you want to work with a specific type of technology, just go and get that job, who cares if they do less, you know? They want to see that you have that drive, that hunger, and people appreciate that, especially when you're young. Again, I'm not saying I'm old, but there was this, so Kathy Murphy, which is the head of PI at Fidelity, she gave this presentation about vitality, which is like a big thing in Fidelity, vitality, whatever. But anyway, so it was really interesting because our VP gave us the same presentation. It shows, like, as you progress in life, it shows your capacity and demand. So meaning, like, your capacity is the amount of work that you can actually do, right? And demand is the amount of work given to you. So I think when you're, like, 24, 25, you're at your highest capacity. And then once you reach that peak, your capacity starts coming down. But your demand, when your capacity is at its highest, your demand is not even there. But then once your capacity starts coming down, your demand only increases. So that's why it's very important for you to work hard when you're young. Yeah, it's true.
No.
I look back at it now, I was like, I don't know how I was going to school and working full time. Like, I must have been crazy, you know? But it was tough, but I could probably do that now. But yeah,
you're not that old.
No, I know. I'm just saying. You know, that's different for everyone, but I think there's some truth to that, obviously.
I'm actually 30 right now, and I go to work full time, and I'm a full time student, and I do feel like it's a lot.
Yeah, it's like if you're able to keep that focus, it's all about focus, you know. I tell people, like, especially programming, if you want to be, like, super productive, it's about focus. Like, your mind has to be clear, and you have to be objective. It's like, I don't know if any of you guys ever watched Formula One. Like, being that race car driver, you know? You have to be, like, and super fast, and you're going through curves, and you just have to...
One of the nice things about it is when you get a job... You can focus on what you have to know for that job, whereas when you're in school, you're broken up into four or five different things you need to focus on in addition to your work. And it's just easier when you're working and what you have to do is program in JavaScript.
Yeah.
So your whole focus is on JavaScript, not on all the other things that
we
spread you out on.
Yeah. Yeah,
and so people will learn more, usually, their first year on the job than they learned.
Yeah, well, it's true, but it's just how it is. You have to, that's what the school is. I mean, you're exposing people to different sorts of things that they feel more...
As I've told you, I think before, I went to school for a week and a half, and then they told me to start programming. And, you know, I learned an awful lot that year, because that's all I did 8 hours a day is I programmed in COBOL.
Yeah.
And so I learned it very fast and very effectively because that's what I had to do.
Yeah.
You know, for 40 hours a week, that's what I did.
But that's also what I meant by that. Like, you got to go for the job that is giving you the tools that you want to learn, right? I want to learn this, then do everything you can to get that job. Because now you're getting paid to work, obviously, but you're also getting paid to learn, you know?
Right.
I'll give you an example. Like, in 2 years, not even 2 years, my salary doubled. So...
Nice.
Yeah, no, I'm not, like, I'm just letting you know, like, that's the kind of industry that this is, you know? There's a high demand, and there's always going to be a high demand. Because until they have AI being able to write its own software, it's going to take a long time. You know, they're going to take all the jobs, but the programmers are going to be the last ones. So, yeah.
Now, have you ever thought to yourself, like, a lot of the older programmers learn, you know, COBOL, MIPS, and assembly language, right? So have you ever thought, and, you know, today we learn C++, Java, JavaScript. Have you ever thought to yourself, like, wow, these older languages are, like you almost appreciate the older programmers.
Yeah.
Like, have you ever thought that? Or is that just me?
No, I do. Yeah, I mean, still to this day, like, C++, I learned C++ here from Igor, and it was, like, awesome. Like, you know, if I didn't go into JavaScript, I would have probably gone into that. It's really cool. Like, I love C++. But, you know, unfortunately, like, not unfortunately, but, you know, I just went on a different path. But as time goes on, I'll tell you this much, the language becomes a little bit more, you know,
easier.
Abstracted. Yeah, easier. Because now they're writing, like, the languages are so smart that they can deal with the more abstracted architecture of the language, like pointers and, you know, all those, you know, places in memory within the RAM, so it takes care of all that for you. And it makes development easier, because that's what they want. They want development to be easier. I think about Apple, right? Think about the iPhone. If they make it hard for people to develop, then they're gonna see a decrease in the amount of apps being deployed and updates, and it's just not good for business. So they want developers to have an easier experience. And that's why I don't like Java. Java's are really complicated, and what I can do with Node, it'll take me like what I can do with Node in 1 or 2 days will take me like 2 or 3 weeks in Java. Okay. It takes a while.
So Node is something to look for, guys.
Yeah, and then there's Eclipse, and oh my God, I don't even want to get into it.
No, I mean all the names you said. I mean, you can't possibly be an expert in all of the things.
No, yeah, but I feel like that's what I mean to tell him. Like, I feel like that gets in the way of development, and that's what I don't like about it. You know, I worked. I contracted at Staples for 3 months. That was my first like big corporation job, and I joined, and they were like fully Java, right? It was all Java. And their website, they do actually Staples' second biggest e-commerce business behind Amazon, which
I thought. Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, because it's not just Staples.com. They own a few, they own like Staples Advantage, and they own a different other domains. But I joined there, and it was such a mess. It was all Java. And literally, like, you join, and they were like, and I was doing front-end work at that time, and they were like, they just gave me the computer, and here you go, set it up. So it took me like almost 4 weeks to set up my machine. Like, for almost 4 weeks. And I was getting paid really well. Like, think about it, like how unproductive that is. And then, when I finished, I wrote a bunch of documentation. This is how you get it done, blah, blah. And then they're like, wow, you were like one of the fastest. And I'm thinking, so like, you know, I was there on a three month contract, and right then and there, I knew like this is not the place for me. You know, I'm too good for this. So yeah, especially when you join like corporations, you
remember know, you're being recorded.
Yeah, you start noticing like a culture, right? And then I joined Fidelity, and I love it over there. It's really nice. It's a little uptight, but it's nice.
I think one of the other people is coming in for the 11 o'clock classes with Fidelity and Quincy.
Oh,
I think
really?
That was Fidelity.
Yeah. Cool.
If I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, Fidelity has offices here in Smithfield and in Boston. Where else? Well, they have it all over the country. Yeah. Those are the ones close by.
Anybody else got any other questions?
Yeah. If you could give us 3 things to focus on for the future that you think help us, just generally in any field, languages or anything we should look into, what would you recommend?
It all depends what you want to do, right? If you want to do like mobile development, then you need to focus on that. And also it depends, like do you want to develop for Android, or do you want to develop for iPhone, right? Because those are two different environments. They could be similar, but they're two different languages. And if you're more into the web, then you need to focus on that. Well, the only thing I can tell you is that time, you know, time is valuable. Your time is valuable. If you spend a lot of time picking up this, picking up that, you're going to talk to people who are know-it-alls. But you know, like, you can only know so much, right? You can only master so much. You look at a sports player, right? If the guy's good at soccer, he's good at soccer, right? He's not going to be a great basketball player, too, you know? So I'm not saying that's, you know, like I work with many different technologies, but they're all kind of similar in a way, right? So yeah, I would focus on what you want to do and what you see yourself doing in the future and doing what you really enjoy and then focus on that, right? And then, but you have to spend your own time on it. It's not like you're not going to go up just by coming into work and doing work. One thing I can tell you too is that once you start doing this, you're going to work a lot of monkey coders. And a monkey coder is like someone who gets in and they just do what they have to do and they leave, right? And I put a lot of extra hours. And, you have to really enjoy what you're doing or else you're only going to accomplish so much. But also, there's a balance, right? Because I was, like I said, I was really young and driven. I got to this point now where I work with, principals and directors and VPs, and then you start noticing there's a whole different aspect to this now, right? It's not about coding anymore. It's about, how can we make the coders better, right? How can we make the application software better? But at the same time, it can be very political. You have to be a well-spoken person. You're going to go up and give presentations. So then there becomes you can get to a point where it's more soft skills, right? It's not so much just, my director, he's a very knowledgeable, very intelligent guy. But nowadays, he probably doesn't write that much code, because he has me and some other folks working under him. So as you progress through your career, it just kind of changes. But then you have to ask yourself, what do you want to do, Some people are okay with coding. I love coding. But I wouldn't mind, being an architect. I would love that at some point. And also, if you're, looking to make it big, and potentially, making money, a lot of money, you could go and join a startup, and you're going to have all of that, but you're going to have a lot of hard work. It's going to be a lot of work and a lot of headaches. But if you get the right deal and they go public, let's say, you can become a millionaire. And it's true. It just happens in Boston, It happens. It happens, in San Francisco. Things like that happen. You just have to, you have to have a nice contract when it comes to that.
Talk a little bit about salaries. Just what you see out there for salaries and how salaries starting and progressing.
Yeah, so I think if you're starting off in Boston, you're probably going to start off at 60, let's say. And then as you progress, maybe 2 or 3 years worth of experience, you're going to be looking at 80. And then 5, you're going to be looking at over 100. Base and then plus bonus, and there's great companies out there, they provide great packages. I work at Fidelity and I get 7% 401k matching, which is a lot. I think it's one of the highest. And then not only that, at the end of the year there's also 10% profit share on top of my pay and bonus, and that goes all towards my 401k. And then my bonus is about 15 or 20% of my pay, so which is not bad. But yeah, and as you get more experience and more knowledgeable about the type of software you're working with, then companies, they really need experienced people. It's just how it is. So. Today, I always get emails. I've had, recruiters from Facebook, Amazon, I lost count. IBM. Yeah, I'm serious. IBM. Yahoo. These are big ones, right? Brands that we know about. Spotify, E-Trade. The only one right now that I'm, maybe one day hoping, but it's not going to happen because you got to go to them. That would be Google. Google, you have to go to them.
You wouldn't want to live in California?
No, they have offices in Cambridge.
Oh, do they?
They have an office right in front of the MIT building, You want to have a good office?
A little connection.
No, it's Google facing MIT. I was at their MIT with my friend. I was oh, do you know where the Google office is? I was no. I was at my MIT helping him with this project. project that he was working on. And then I was like, no, I don't look over there. It's like Google, like fluorescent lights. Like, oh, okay. But that's what's happening. Like, now GE is going to Boston, too, because they want to attract talent, right? Just think about Boston has Harvard, MIT. There's so many universities. BU, Boston College, Northeastern is a great university. And they want to attract the talent. And there's a lot of software being developed in Boston. GE is going to the Seaport. And I already had a GE recruiter reach out to me as well. But it's one thing they reach out to you, you know, that's kind of normal. So another thing going into like the interview process, depending on these companies that you work for, they require a lot of math. Like if you go to Google, they're going to have you do calculus, which I think is bizarre, but that's, I mean, that's just how they operate. And you can understand why they do that, because they're not so much focused on your knowledge of servers and language and this and that, but they're focused on your knowledge of data structures and math and algorithms, because they're dealing with a lot of data and millions of users. So your code, you know, makes a lot of difference. And if you have, if you don't write it in the most high-performant way, it could actually cost the company millions of dollars. So that's why they like very focused on those traits. So meaning, you could go for a Google job. You don't have to have the degrees, but they're definitely going to want that math, right? And some companies are very like that. I know I don't have that level of math, and I don't really care, because, you know, it would be nice maybe one day. But at the end of the day, like, what are they hiring me for? You know, I'm a programmer, I'm not a mathematician. So, anyways. Yeah, because also, what I'm trying to say, when I worked at a startup, we had a team of engineers, and we had, like, an algorithm, right? And then the person who worked on that algorithm was an electrical engineer, and that was his only focus, right? He didn't, like, he wasn't writing code. That didn't pertain with the algorithm that was running in the application. That was his main focus. So that's what I mean. So he was writing software, but he was writing math, you know? And, yeah, but like I said, some companies, they require that level of math.
It depends on what you're doing. Now, my brother works for GE, and he designs control systems for jet engines, helicopters, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
and,
so
you know,
you need
the heavy math there. And they also, you know, have software that they use in this design, in the whole design process.
Yeah. It's tough, too. I have friends who have, like, math, you know, like, master's math degrees. And it's one of those things, like, if you're not sharpening that knife, it's hard to remember all that stuff.
Go ahead.
You know, it occurs to me that the minimum math skill you would need to program is logic. And would you say that's true?
Yeah, I mean, the way I look at it, I'm a big fan of refactoring your code. So it's like writing an essay. You go in, you write it, and, you know, it's kind of clumsy, and then you write it again. So that's how it is with code. I mean, you get to a point now, like I'm at a point now where I just, like, see patterns. Right, you start seeing patterns, and then, but you always obviously have to look at different techniques. There's this thing called it's like a code.
Getting old.
Yeah, I completely forgot. But anyways, it's like this thing where you code, and there's different challenges, and it's like that you get katas or whatever, and because it's based on karate, and you can do like different problems in different languages, and that's like JavaScript, C#, C++, and then you complete the kata, and then you get like a badge, let's say, right? And then once you're done, you look at the results from different like people who have completed, and then they get rated, right? So then you see like the top five, like, solutions to those problems, and they're really amazing. Like, some people are nasty. I worked with this guy, he was, like, amazing at Linux. I've never seen anything like that. like, forget the GUI. Like, all, like, you know, like, his lines of code, like, of commands, they become this big. Like, he'll format XML into JSON, like, in front of me. Like, within seconds, I'm like, wow, like, how the hell? So, yeah, you work with some really smart people. And again, see, that's really cool knowledge to have. And that's my whole, like, thing with interview process. You know, you get a guy like that, you'll go to Google, they'll have him do, like, a, you know, calculus, like, solution. And they don't take into consideration all this other knowledge that the person has. So, but anyways, that's exciting.
Anybody else got questions, or should we actually
have... Oh, it's called Cold Wars. Look it up. You should join that. And not only that, if you do well on that, like, employers are starting to actually look into that. Another thing, too, I think LinkedIn just bought Lynda.com. So if you have Lynda...
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, you'll go take a few courses. You can add that to your profile. And people look, you know, people look into LinkedIn profile because it's like your resume, you know, it's your open resume.
Yeah, you should be on LinkedIn.
Yeah, and also, yeah, like I said, just focus on what the big companies are using and don't get derailed. Don't start thinking like small shop stuff because then you could be working 2-3 years in some sort of technology and then nobody's using, you know, so just keep that in mind.
Anything else?
Well, actually, I have a question for you. When will you have time today to meet?
After 2.
After 2, okay.
Like I have every Tuesday.
Okay.
Okay, questions? Well, okay. Then let's take a quick look at cookies. So bring up. Thank you, sir. Bring up, and I just want, basically, I wanted you to experiment with these. So bring up PHP. We're going to look at, I was going to look at cookies and sessions today, but I think we'll probably get a chance to look at cookies and then take a look at sessions on Thursday. And then we're done. And next week, as I told you, is going to be open labs on Tuesday and Thursday. Okay, so that you can get caught up. Okay, so if you bring these up, the one I've got open is the set a 1 minute cookie. And so I've got here a set a cookie and I've got a whole lot of notes explaining it. But the set cookie is the cookie I'm setting is called last. And the value, so that's the name. Notice it says set cookie has name, value, and when it's going to expire. And there are a bunch of other clauses you can put in there. If you go into W3 Schools and look up cookies, you'll see that there's a bunch of other things that you can put in there. But what I've got is the name. So the name of the cookie is last. The value that I'm putting into it is Thursday. And I'm putting in an expiration date. Okay, so if you go in again to W3 Schools... and look up cookies. Come on. Okay. So here is the complete list. What is a cookie? A cookie is used to identify a user. A cookie is a small file that the server embeds on the user's computer. Okay. And you can include PHP in cookies. And a cookie is created with the set cookie function. And then down below, they give you all of the parameters that you can have if you want to. So you can have name, value, expire, which are the three things that I use, path, domain, security, etc. And if you scroll down, they give you some examples of what they've got. So in this case, they did one where they said the cookie name is user, the cookie value is John Doe, and then they said set a cookie, and they are setting it using those cookie name and the cookie value, the time, and other things. Okay? So take a look at, I'm doing this fast because we are pretty much out of time, and take a look at that, and then come over, whoops, where did I go? And try running one of them. Okay. So I set it to expire in 1 minute. Okay, the 60 gets to be 1 minute. An hour would be 3600. So the cookie will set, you know, when you get that hello, greeting you, and that sort of thing. That's from a cookie that's been set. Okay, a cookie is being set on your computer. The thing that we're going to look at on Thursday are sessions. And that involves the server, so we'll look at more of that. Okay, so I've got here how to set a cookie, how to delete a cookie, how to check a cookie. So in the checking one, I have got, I'm checking to see if it's been set. If the cookie student has been set, then I'm echoing out the fact that it's been set. If not, I'm echoing out there's a problem with your registration. Okay, so I'm looking and checking to see if the cookie has been set. So if is set cookie name student, if the cookie name student is set, then I am going to put out one message. Otherwise, I'm going to put out a different message. Okay. And if I want to delete a cookie, I can just go in and say, well, actually, that's setting it to negative 60 is going to delete it. And this is the basic retrieve of a cookie, and it tells me the time that I last visited. So if I write that, run that cookie that was called last, and had a value of Thursday, it's going to tell me that the last time you visited was on Thursday. Okay. Because it's looking at last. So go ahead, and as I said, I'm kind of speeding this up. So go ahead and run one of the cookies to set a cookie, and then do a basic retrieve. Okay, this one sets a student. And this one sets the last that I talked about. So if I run this, okay, so I'm going to run this from CIS Web, and you go ahead and run something too.
Professor, I actually have a question about this.
Yeah, just a sec. Okay, go ahead. I just was going to bring this up but go ahead.
All right. What's the significance of 60? Like, plus 60, minus 60?
It's a minute.
Oh, okay. All right.
No deep significance. It's a minute. So this said set a 1 minute cookie, and that's what basically that did, is it sets a 1 minute cookie. Okay, so set a 1 minute cookie .php. And as usual, I managed to not get the right address, so we will look and see where I typed the wrong thing. Set 1 min instead of minute. Okay, so I set a cookie now. So I've now set up a cookie. The cookie is called last. It has a value of Thursday, and it's going to expire in 1 minute. Okay, so now what I need to do is I want to check that, so I'm going to run the one that says basic retrieve. I think I'm remembering the right one. And it says the last time you visited was on Thursday, because here I set it for Thursday, and now in the basic retrieve, I am saying, is the last cookie set? So I'm saying, is set cookie last? And if it is, then I am going to take the value in that cookie and put it in $ last visit and echo out the last time you visited was on Thursday. So I'm taking the value that was in the cookie. Okay. Echo, I do not know when you visited last. So if I click again and refresh that, the minute has passed. So now I'm getting, I do not know when you visited last, because the minute was passed. I had set the cookie for a minute. When the minute was passed, I'm getting the else, because cookie last is no longer set. Okay. So try one of those. Okay, so there are the two that I was looking at. One that was setting the cookie, one that was then testing the cookie, and this is the things that I have. So go in and experiment, set up a cookie, test the cookie, and I used a minute because that gave me about enough time to get up the address so that I could test it. Okay, if I put anything less than that, I'm probably not going to type fast enough to be able to test it. And I'm trying to remember where the cookies are stored on you, but the cookies are stored and you can go and look them up. And I will try to remember to look up the address where they're stored and let you know on Thursday.
Well, if I remember correctly, they're in the temp folder, aren't they?
I don't remember. I honestly don't. Do you remember where cookies are stored?
The cookies?
Yeah. Where?
Within the browser?
Yeah.
Oh, within the browser.
Yeah, right, but where do you get them at them?
Well, if you're using Chrome, you can bring up the developer tools, and you can go to app, and then click a store.
Okay.
And you're going to be able to see the cookies, and you can actually update the value.
Right. So all the cookies are being stored, and as I said, I forgot the address. But as he said, if you go into the developer, you'll probably find it. Did you find it?
It says here, in some browsers, each cookie is a small file, but in Firefox, all cookies are stored in a single file located in the Firefox profile folder. Cookies often store your settings for websites, such as your preferred language or location.
It's the wrong one. Okay. That's interesting. So did everybody get something in and save it and test it and all that good stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that is basically how you can put into your program a cookie if you want to have one. Go out to the user. And as I said, you know, when you log in and it does the height for solar, etc., you're talking about a cookie probably coming back. And if you look, you'll be amazed. If you look, go and do the lookup of the cookies, you'll be amazed at how many are out there. Okay. So that's what I was going to look at today, and we sort of did in a fairly fast way. And I think at this point I'm going to leave sessions for Thursday because I want to spend a little more time on that, and we are running out of time. And I have, yeah, the rest of them are pretty much all having to do with sessions. So I think we will leave it at that, look at sessions on Thursday, and consider this basically a guest speaker day as opposed to a learn anything about cookies and sessions day. But I think that was well worth doing. So go see if you can find the address. Look up and see if you can find, somebody can find the address that we can type in to see the cookies that we have. And as I said, we're pretty much out of time. So get these downloaded. We will look at sessions on Thursday, and we will call it quits now.